well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Hope you had a good weekend. We're going to be talking with Elliot Harding, attorney in Virginia, here in just a second. He is the attorney representing a class action of plaintiffs, actually, 18, 19, and 20-year-olds who want to be able to legally purchase a handgun at retail, which, of course, is illegal under federal law. A U.S. district court judge found that law to be unconstitutional, at least as it applies to these young plaintiffs. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, however, reversed that decision, in essence saying that it's no big burden on the Second Amendment rights of young adults to be unable to purchase the most common firearm used for self-defense. As you can imagine, Elliot and his clients disagree with that decision. You probably do as well. I had the opportunity to sit down with Elliot. Actually, Elliot took a couple of minutes out of a family trip to talk with us about that decision and the appeal, which is coming to the U.S. Supreme Court. Take a look and a listen. Elliot, thanks so much for joining me on the program today. It's good talking with you, sir.
Yes, sir. And thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got an update here, right? And I covered this at Bearing Arms a couple of days ago. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals issuing yet another disappointing Second Amendment decision, this time ruling that adults 18, 19, and 20 years old don't have a Second Amendment right to essentially purchase or possess a firearm, right?
Well, yeah, and, you know, to make it a little bit more nuanced, they effectively held that that age bracket doesn't have the right to, or to commercially purchase a handgun, right? To clarify, because the law we're attacking is a 1968 law that prohibits federally licensed firearm dealers, FFLs, from selling handguns to those under 21. And so the court found that that's okay. Reversed the district court opinion from the Eastern District of Virginia. The U.S. District Court had ruled in our favor. But ironically, the Fourth Circuit had previously, years ago, in a different case that I had, found the opposite of what this new panel found. There was a time in a Hirschfeld case that we had several years ago where the Fourth Circuit struck down these same laws. But that case was vacated due to mootness, because our clients got older than 21. This case involves a class action now. This one does.
Okay.
And it's in direct conflict with the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit, in a decision earlier this year, Reese, against ATF, the Fifth Circuit found that these laws are unconstitutional. So now we have a circuit split.
Yeah, and what's interesting is DOJ did not appeal that Fifth Circuit decision to the Supreme Court. Since your clients are on the losing side of the Fourth Circuit's decision, you can appeal this case to the Supreme Court. And are you planning to do so?
Yes, sir. We actually already did. We typically, people have up to 90 days to file a petition to the Supreme Court. We did it about 2 weeks. This Fourth Circuit decision came out on June 18th, and we filed our petition on July. I think it was the 3rd. The court might have received it on the 7th. I got to go back and look. But
okay.
So the government has until August 7th to write their response to our petition as to whether or not they don't think it should be taken. They think it, you know, whether or not they contest the petition or not. But I think they'd be on somewhat weak grounds to contest the petition, given that they rolled over from the Fifth Circuit's case. So I hope they ask the court to take the case too, to at least resolve the split. You can't have two warring circuits like that on such a national issue.
Absolutely. And we've got the 11th Circuit, too, the NRA versus Glass case, I think it is. And that, too, the 11th Circuit said, no, 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, they don't have a right to commercially buy a firearm. Florida's Attorney General James Uthmeyer has said he doesn't want to defend the Florida law. So I think his reply brief is due to the Supreme Court July 21st. So there's a lot going on with this issue of young adults and their Second Amendment rights. And it is, I think, heading to a point where the Supreme Court has to step in and resolve this, because you've got some courts saying that, I think it was the 11th Circuit that said that 18, 19, and 20 year olds are basically minors when it comes to the Second Amendment. What was the Fourth Circuit's justification for saying, yeah, young adults, they can purchase, you know, a long gun, but yeah, we can deny them the right to purchase a handgun at retail?
So the Fourth Circuit adopted a lot of the logic that the 11th Circuit did about what we would call the infant doctrine. And it's the first, but this is the first time the Fourth, any circuit really leaned in on this. And I guess to explain it as clearly as I can, they found that this is just a minor commercial restriction. And the reason the Fourth Circuit did, really doubling down on some dicta from the Heller case, where the court said, sure, yeah, there can be some commercial restrictions, but what the court meant in that respect was things like maybe a minor waiting period or a background check or something like that, not an absolute prohibition on commercial action here. And that's what this is people say, oh, well, this age bracket, they're still allowed to get in private transactions. What people don't realize is that's not a commercial access. By definition, if you're engaged in the business of selling firearms, you have to be a licensed dealer. Mm-hmm. And so if a licensed dealer claims you restricted them from the commercial access altogether. But the Fourth Circuit's logic was, back in 1791, this age, those under 21 were minors. And there was a doctrine back then called, well, it still exists today for those under 18. It's called the infant doctrine. And that is, effectively, they can't be held to contract. Okay. Meaning they can't be held. You can't, if I'm a dealer and a minor engages in a commercial transaction with me, I don't have any recourse against them to hold them to that burden. And so the Fourth Circuit's logic was, well, if they weren't fully vested in commercial action back then it stands to reason that the government at least theoretically could have the power to restrict them from engaging in commercial activity. And as a result, that's the history, text, and tradition. And now it's a really strained reading of Bruin.
Yeah.
And in our brief, in our petition, I effectively view it as, I argued, I said the Fourth Circuit engaged in what we would consider just rational basis plus Bruin. And that is, it really, the government didn't even argue for that. That's what blew my mind. Mm-hmm. Is the Fourth Circuit injected a reasoning to uphold this law that the government didn't even supply in their briefs and arguments. And that's kind of an old school means of rational basis, where you try to uphold a law in any possible way.
Right.
And to me, it's a real rejection of what the Supreme Court has said in Bruin, and then, of course, in Heller and McDonald and the prior cases. But it's the government's burden to show that this is the type of regulation that would have existed back then. They didn't. And if anything, the 1792 Militia Act, which we relied on heavily, supports the alternative. And it says the founders not only would have expected these people to have commercial access to pistols back then, but they actually had a duty to supply those when called into the militia. And so I just think the Fourth Circuit, thankfully, with these types of cases, anytime they're reviewed de novo, meaning the logic of the Fourth Circuit doesn't, I don't want to be offensive to the courts, but it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, if the Supreme Court wants to resolve the issue, it will supply its own reasoning. It's not going to go back and say, oh, well, the Fourth was wrong because of this nuanced thing. Therefore, they're just going to review it with a blank slate. And hopefully, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic they'll take it. And then I'm cautiously optimistic with the makeup of this court and their adherence to the Bruin standard, that the result will go the other way and more in line with the Fifth Circuit's decision in Reese.
I mean, listen, I'm not an attorney, but it, from where I sit, it should. Yeah, as you say, there is a circuit court split, which theoretically makes it more likely that the court will step in and grant cert to one or more of these cases. And then you look not only at Bruin and the, you know, text history and tradition test that they laid out, but you look back at what they said about handguns and Heller, right? That the core purpose of the Second Amendment, not the only purpose, but the core purpose of the Second Amendment is individual self-defense. And perhaps that right is most important inside the home. They noted that handguns are the most common arm used for self-defense. And we know that, you know, commercial sales are the most common way to acquire a firearm, right? So, I, again, from my non-lawyerly perspective, it just doesn't make any sense that adults who have access to their Second Amendment rights could be deprived of the most common way to acquire the most common firearm used for self-defense. And it looks like we may have lost Elliot there. I apologize for that. Anyway, we'll get him back on the program very, very soon. But as he said, the government has until, I believe what he said, August 11th. We'll see if they request a delay, as we have seen from the DOJ and several other Second Amendment cases. But this is an issue that, frankly, the Supreme Court, whether they accept this case, NRA versus Glass, whether they combine those two cases, this is an issue that the Supreme Court has to address and resolve at some point here in the near future. I appreciate that Elliot joins us on the program. Sorry about the technical issues there, but we'll have him back after the cert petition has been filed. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a story out of Kentucky. You may have seen the headlines about a shooting at a church in Kentucky yesterday. Apparently, this guy had shot a state trooper who had pulled him over and then fled to a church where he may have had some sort of relationship with some parishioners, shot and killed two individuals there at the church, I believe wounded two others. So it turns out this guy, well known to law enforcement, in fact, he had a domestic violence hearing scheduled for today, according to the Lexington Herald Leader. 47-year-old Guy House had a long criminal history, including for auto theft. He tested positive for methamphetamine last year in a court-ordered drug test that was part of his probation. He had been released from his probation in January, going on this crime spree again yesterday that ended with three people injured, three others dead, including himself, shooting and injuring a state trooper who tried to pull him over outside of Bluegrass Airport Sunday morning. Then he carjacked another vehicle in another part of town, then went to the Richmond Road Baptist Church, apparently looking for the mother of his children. She was not there, and instead, House shot her mother and sister, shot and injured two other people before House himself was shot and killed at the church. So this is a guy who, again, not allowed to possess a firearm. And probably, I'm guessing if we go back and look at his criminal history, probably could have been, and certainly should have been, behind bars instead of being put on probation and then released from probation a few months earlier. Especially after testing positive last year as part of his probation, that could have resulted in him going to prison the entirety of his original sentence that had been imposed on him. But apparently that did not happen. Today's Armed Citizen story from North Texas, where a man was shot and killed after attempting to assault a woman in her North Texas home. According to police, the man and woman were previously in a relationship. So there were some similarities, I guess, to this situation in Kentucky yesterday, the difference being that this woman was able to protect and defend herself. According to the Grand Prairie Police Department, the man arrived at the woman's home early Sunday morning. Forcing his way inside the residence, he began to assault the woman. The Grand Prairie Police says during that assault, she was able to grab a handgun and then shoot her attacker. When officers responded to the home, they found the man suffering from a gunshot wound, later pronounced dead by the Grand Prairie Fire Department. The department has also said the woman was taken to a local hospital. She is expected to recover from her injuries. The PD continues its investigation, but they are viewing this as a self-defense shooting. It'll be reviewed by the Dallas County DA's office. So far, the man's identity has not been released. But again, I have to say, I mean, I generally see most of these armed citizen stories that we cover as a tragedy to one degree or another, right? Why did this circumstance have to happen? These road rage shootings we've talked about before. Just drive down the road. You don't have to risk your life because you get angry. In this case, I'm not going to call it a tragedy. If this guy went to his ex's home, started assaulting her, and she was able to protect herself. I'm not going to shed a tear for this individual's loss of life, because he should not have done that in the first place. But we'll see if we can get more information as it becomes available. Finally today, our good deed of the day: in the right place at the right time, we'll enable to do the right thing. A good Samaritan and his 8-year-old son able to rescue 5 people in St. Johns County, Florida, when their sailboat caught on fire. The St. Johns County Fire and Rescue reports that the department had responded to this fire about 12:15 Sunday afternoon. When they got to the water, they found the sailboat fully involved in flames and smoke. There were 5 people who were already in the water. But before they could get to them, a good Samaritan, fellow boater, rescued all 5, I believe the family dog as well, and ended up bringing them on to shore, where a fireboat then arrived and put out the flames. St. John's Fire Rescue said no one was injured in the fire. Its cause still under investigation. But again, this could have been a lot worse were it not for the quick thinking and the fast actions of that good Samaritan and his 8-year-old son, who were able to rescue that family when their sailboat went ablaze. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Aaron Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you very much for being a part of the program. I'm about to head to the veterinarian's office, have a little bit of emergency with the big boy Bentley. Hopefully we'll get that taken care of. We'll be back tomorrow with the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. I would encourage you, though, to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date, again, on everything that's going on with your right to keep and bear arms. Tom Knighton is off today, so I'm flying solo, but we've got lots of news for you from around the country. And again, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.